The staff and volunteers at CGSF wish you a jolly,
merry,
happy,
joyful,
fantastic,
exciting,
fancy,
magnificent,
remarkable,
special,
white,
sparkling,
terrific,
stunning,
festive,
and
wonderful
holiday
season.
Your home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
And we are handing over the reins today, putting the power, not quite to the people.
We have a guest in which we are making ourselves into his guest.
Yes. Bradley, welcome. Would you like to introduce yourself and let folks know maybe how we know you and why we asked you to do this?
I'm Bradley. I'm a former reporter for Extra, and I currently write for Kitchissippi Times. I'm here today to talk to your two favorite hosts, Luke and Sebastian, about their long careers in radio. And Luke and I have known each other for a very long time. We've covered queer media or queer news in the media in Ottawa for a very long time.
Mm. It reminds, I think one of the, so the idea for today's show is we've been doing this, we've been on the host side of the mic.
Yeah.
A long time now, almost 15 years. We'll get into it. But we decided what we'll do is we'll hand it over to Bradley, and I have no idea what you're going to ask me.
Yeah.
Was not expecting questions. I don't know. I should have. I am excited about this conversation and to see where it goes.
I don't know why you're so... Because I've known you... I mean, you've known Luke a little bit longer and you know him a little bit better. But we've also known each other for over a decade.
Yeah, very long time.
I've never known you to not prepare if somebody asks you to prepare. Yeah. So I don't know what your issue is.
You asked a journalist to interview you and the journalist wrote questions.
This might be a surprise. We'll see. What secrets will we unveil? I'm going to shut up. Until told to speak, and I'm going to hand it over to yourself. So, Bradley, take it away.
So, you've been creating media for over 15 years in different iterations. Can you take me back to the inception of Velvet Studio and tell me about how that came to be?
Oh, specific Velvet Studio?
Now, you may not know that we started off as three gays on the radio.
Right, I did know that, and I forgot.
So, we're recording in my office, which has... our radio show's logos on the wall,
mm-hmm.
and that's way back there, Three Gays in the Radio, where we were hosting with...
Dave
McMillan.
Yes.
And his contribution, he was great. He's a very charming man.
Yeah.
I adore Dave. But
he was really good at research. He would bring things before the show, but then the moment we started recording, he would lock up.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he was very outgoing. He made connections for us sometimes. But yeah, when...
His go-to was interesting. Yeah, yeah. With like that flowy cadence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, iconic. But it started off... Maybe you... I tell the origin story of our show all the time.
Okay.
You know, on the bus to my mailman. Anytime someone stays still long enough. Sebastian, why don't you tell some of the origin story of the show?
So, Luke and I had met in... the university, the Pride Center, at Carleton University. And we had met, we got along fairly well. And then about, not even long after we first met, just a few months after we first met, there was a famous incident in Ottawa where a young man took his own life. And we were talking and I mentioned a story, because before I was here, I was on Queer Radio Hamilton, based out of CKCU. In Hamilton, Ontario.
CFMU,
that's right.
CKCU is here. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Our show was on CKCU.
We were on CKCU, CFMU, that's correct. But yeah, I was on Queer Radio Hamilton for quite some time, and the host for that show, the way that he got started was in the early 90s when he was a closeted teenager. He used to go out to his car and listen to the host before him do Queer Radio Hamilton, which was like this... really sweet-natured lesbian couple, and they would just talk about, like, news in Canada. And in the 90s, LGBT news in Canada was a very different beast. Mm-hmm. It was less about rights. It was more about, like, what was the latest raid? What was going on with HIV deaths? Mm-hmm. What was going on with women's shelter closures? It was very different, but still, like, it was the only way that he could feel connected to the community because he was still too closeted to actually participate. And then later on, he ended up becoming the host of the show. And I told the story to Luke, and he said, let's do that. It was basically, yeah. I mean, I'm really boiling down the story, but it really did. He just, like, looked at me. He's like, we should do that.
Just to flesh out, what I recall of your recalling of the story was that he would tell his parents, I'm going to go practice driving, would drive half a mile, park in the 7-Eleven parking lot for an hour and listen to the radio show. And, like, that,
It was the rough part of Hamilton. It would have been a Hasty Mart.
Went to the Hasty Mart, and then just parked up and listened to the show. And it was that idea of the radio show serving as a gateway to queer culture and queerness for folks who would not otherwise have access. Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind that we were talking at that time about the passing of Jamie Hubley, Councillor Allen.
I was going to say, is that the person who committed suicide you're referencing?
Yeah, so Jamie Hubley, who was, I think, 14 or 15 at the time in Ottawa, unfortunately passed around the whole It Gets Better movement that happened at the same time.
Yeah.
And
which emerged partly as a result of that.
Yeah, there was a contagion of teen suicides at that point in 2009, 2010, give or take. Mm-hmm. I remember being in the Pride Center of Carleton, having this conversation with you and feeling like when a young person in your community is lost in that way to bullying in the community, that sense of being othered and isolated, I felt like we as a community had also let him down. Mm. There wasn't a huge amount of queer representation in media on the whole at that point. Really, you know, making us feel old here. But, like, there wasn't a whole lot out there. And definitely nothing distinctly local. And I think our mission initially was just to be gay voices on the radio.
Yeah.
The pivot to the Velvet Studio was because we were no longer just three gays on the radio. Yeah, we were two gays, two lesbians, and a bisexual lady.
Yeah.
It was like, it was just no, the branding did not brand.
And then so sometimes Wanda.
We were the Velvet Studio for years.
Yes.
Until people kept thinking we were the Velvet Underground.
Yes.
Branding also was not great.
And there was more of an emphasis on evergreen topics. We were more of a topics show at the time. Like, we would do current events, but we would typically use,
it's like, what is asexuality?
It would be like, here's an event that happened in the news. What's the bigger story? What's the narrative behind it? We would use the news story as a launching off point to talk about deeper issues. So things like, there was one episode where we talked about, like, Polari and the Hanky Code and basically just ways of people in the community communicating with each other in a way that people who aren't gay would not be able to identify that you're communicating with each other so that you could openly negotiate. I'm just going to say encounters.
Liaisons.
Well, I'm saying it broadly because it's not just about sex. It's also about relationships, building networks. Like, people would use some of this coded, like, I mean, I'm describing an episode instead of being interviewed. We could do the episode right now in the mind frame that I'm in. Point being, but yeah, it was really just that there was current events and we would use that as sort of an inspiration to talk about some deeper subject, usually for 40 minutes, 50 minutes. I mean, we covered a range of things. We talked about grassroots arts movements. So things like how post-rock is weirdly a gay movement.
Lesbian vampire pulp fiction was an episode.
No, it was lesbian detective novels.
Yeah, that was it. Yes. That was it. Yeah, yeah.
Just deeper subjects. Some of them were incredibly dated, but it was also meant to be, like, educational. So, like, I read something about gay pirates. Let's talk about Matalotages. Mm-hmm. You know?
Let's.
So, yeah. No, but a Matalotage is like a same-sex wedding, kind of, that pirates did and nobody else. But yeah, it was more of a topics show, but they're very hard to research. They're very hard to put together. There's a lot of editing, and we had kind of run out of ideas.
Well, also, over the course of 10 years, we've seen a shift in favor of queer folks. Yeah. And in the last couple of years, we're seeing a shift back away from queer folks in terms of, like, GLAAD, the Gays and Lesbians Against Defamation. They've been tracking attitudes on queerness in the States, and they're finding a shift against it, like, empirically. But we found that as we were going upwards in terms of queer appreciation, we were finding that the sort of general knowledge that the public has, both gay and straight, was becoming more sophisticated. You know, we didn't need to describe what is a gay to, you know, necessarily.
I don't think we ever went that basic.
The verdict is still out on this.
But my point is that our audience was becoming more aware and informed. And even though, even today when we cover news stories, we do still contextualize and give that background. We don't assume knowledge.
I
think that's a key piece of our approach. But we did find that that more base level informative approach was becoming exhausted.
Did you encounter any homophobia on campus while you were producing your show?
Not to do with the show. There's always going to be that one wang who just says something out of context. I mean, I ran into the, you know, that sort of... I hear it a lot from BLM activists, the sort of like passive aggressive, they think they're being supportive, but actually they're kind of being bigoted, university educated, middle class white lady.
Or a man, I've seen that too.
I've gotten a lot of like, I know you're trying to be supportive, but do you know how off-putting what you just said is? I got some of that, but nothing to do with the show. Actually, the show, we've gotten pretty good support, generally speaking.
I was lucky enough to, I mean, first of all, white guys, middle age, middle income, like we are privileged up the wazoo. Point is that we're more privileged than other folks, and there are definitely a lot of stations that have not chosen to syndicate our show.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Creative direction and curation of their broadcast is their own purview. But I hear from a friend of mine who also has a queer show who found that radio stations would say, oh, we have the gay show. And it was typically us. We were typically holding the space of the gay show because you couldn't have two of them. That would just be too much gay. So I was surprised. The only kind of homophobia I've come across is that approach of, yeah, we'll serve that audience with this product, end of list, no further contemplation.
That's the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Yeah. So that's a little bit more I came across, but homophobia.
Yeah, that's good.
But like I said, we're coming from a very privileged...
I think probably the most homophobic thing that we've ever encountered was me. After I sat in on that Toronto Pride
AGM,
and I called him up. Every offensive word you could use about the gay community, I think I screamed that into the phone at one point.
I reported you as a hate crime. It was awful.
Have you sat in on Toronto AGMs?
No, I've sat on an Ottawa-based AGM.
Ottawa ones are moderate.
Yes. We don't have to go over the time I recorded the Pink Triangle Services meeting and then put it online, and then everyone got mad at me. I'm like, this is legal. They're like, you can't do this. I'm like, yes, I can, actually.
So one of the first stories we did was we dug into the financial reports and annual meeting reports of Pink Triangle Services in Ottawa, and just like blew that wide open. And I think people found us irritating.
That's
what a journalist does. You're supposed to.
If you're irritating and want to get involved, volunteer at your local radio station.
That is something that I've always found very frustrating about the LGBT media in general, is the refusal to expose bad behavior. It's like everyone is so afraid of the narrative getting out of hand, but I also believe in holding our own accountable. Like if someone is a sex pest, then you need to report that.
Sex pest. I've never heard that term before.
You've never heard sex pest?
No.
Well, on that bombshell, we're going to let Bradley know about sex pests. But in the meantime, we decided for the music this week to showcase some of the music that has really jumped out to us. I'm going to kick it off with a track that helped inspire our theme tune.
Yes.
This is Diamond Rings. We interviewed Diamond Rings live in Ottawa. It was a great interview. You were a fantastic musician interviewer, Sebastian. This is I'm Just Me by Diamond Rings from like 12 years ago. And we will be back just after.
I got a late start, I was too afraid to love.
Zach, it's Bradley. I'm here with Luke and Sebastian. We're talking about their very storied careers in radio. Do you have a favorite guest that you've interviewed over the years? If you had to pick one.
That's mean.
If you had to pick several.
I will tell you about our worst guest.
Oh, yes, please. That's more interesting.
I think I know who it is. Is it the journalist?
Yeah. Noreen Fagan. Brilliant woman. Brilliant woman. Fantastic journalist.
We went to dim sum with her.
Yeah, she is amazing.
Yeah, she's a lovely
Terrible guest.
Yeah.
Absolutely dreadful guest.
She admitted that she had never actually been interviewed before, despite the fact that
on the other side of the mic. Yeah,
she had been working in journalism for decades at that point. And we asked her a question. She'd go, yes.
So,
would you care to elaborate?
Mm-hmm.
Such as, like, it was,
if I recall correctly,
pulling teeth.
She was launching a local news app type thing, I think it was. And so we interviewed about it.
She was trying to pull Dorothy's Closet out of the ashes.
Okay.
If you remember that app.
I do.
Yeah. So the whole idea with radio, it's storytelling.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We tell stories. And we wanted her to tell the story of what she's doing. And we're like, oh, so you're doing this thing? And she goes, yes, I am. And that was it.
I really hope Noreen listens to this.
It was really just, she got mad at us at the end of, like, after the show closed.
Mm.
She's like, you guys just kept talking to each other. I'm like, it's because you won't speak. Like, it was, she was like a mint. It was, a very well, brilliant, established journalist who's great at storytelling in the written word.
Yeah.
Not good at storytelling, like, orally, as it were. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite otherwise, other than the very awkward one? And she knows that we know this about her. So this is nothing being revealed on air, but yeah.
We've interviewed a few. Some of the Olympians have been fun.
True.
I interviewed some of the lesbians on the Canadian soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm blanking on his name. Drake Jensen.
There we go.
Very entertaining.
Actually, we used to go to brunch with him.
Yeah.
Every time he was in town, even if we weren't doing an episode, he would at least say, like, are you free at this weird time? That, of course, we weren't free. And we're like, no. But we did end up going to brunch with him a few times.
Absolutely. He was great.
I would say that Diamond Rings was a me interview.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a rare instance where I would say that I did the interviewer and you were in the room agog, not knowing what to do. And a lot of it really just came down to the fact that I am a little bit more of a music guy.
I don't speak musician. I do not speak musician.
When I was in high school, most of my friends were musicians. So, like, actually, my best friend in high school, she used to jam with Owen Pallett back when they were in the Renaissance Fair together, and they just walked around, like, in costume with fiddles. So Owen Pallett, if you can imagine him, like, dressed like a page boy at a Ren Fair. It suits him. But, you know, Diamond Rings, I had no idea what was going on. He just said, you're going to be interviewing John O. later on. And I was like, who's John O? It was like, John O, he's a singer. I'm like, do I look him up under that name? And he's like, I don't know. It took me forever to get out of him, because Luke is not very good.
I am also a terrible interviewer.
He's bad at texting. Eventually, he's like, okay, Diamond Rings. It's like, okay, so I did some research. I didn't have any time to actually listen to the music, to get commentary ready. That's not true. I had time to listen to one song.
Good thing you did that. You need to do that.
Yeah. Yes. So we show up, we get backstage. Turns out that his onstage presence is a persona that he puts on.
Like Paris Hilton.
And the real him has crippling shyness and interviews terribly.
Interesting.
So he was very much like Tom York in that way. But so I was like, okay, so I know musicians go through a lot of interviews. Sometimes it's the same interview 1,000 times over. So the first thing I said to him, okay, before we start, I would just like to, you know, do a little prep question. Is there something you've been asked 1,000 times you don't want me to ask? And is there something you've never been asked that you've always wanted to talk about and you haven't had the opportunity? And just the fact that I've really sort of connected with him on that level. And towards the end, I was like, what are you listening to? Not like, what are your influences? Like, if you want to talk about that, that's fine as well. But what are you listening to? And then, because I know musicians love talking about music. Some of them love talking about themselves, but a lot of them, if they're shy, they would rather talk about other things. So we connected over that, and I mentioned, like, the album cover, and I was like, this looks like very heavy Grace Jones influence, but I couldn't hear the Grace Jones in your music. And he's like, the drummer. And I was like, tell me about your drummer. And it turned into a thing. And halfway through the interview, his producer, who was sitting in the corner, she was doing her hair, and she just spun around in her chair, and she was, like, staring at me with laser beam eyes. I was like, what is going on? Do you remember that?
No. I think we were going too long. Like,
yeah, well,
we
were just chatting away for hours. She was giving me the death stare. And then on her way out the door, she pulled me aside. She's like, I've never seen him be that friendly with someone he's known in under 3 months before. Wow. So I was like, oh, that's nice. And then afterwards, like, we got to stay and watch the concert. And that was the first time I heard his whole album. And I was like, I completely guessed as to what kind of musician he was. And I'm lucky that I guessed right. And actually, I ended up listening to him quite a bit after. Because he is the kind of musician that I would listen to. And I discovered him after I had interviewed the guy. But anyway, afterwards, when we went up to say, you know, like, thanks for comping the tickets, we're out the door. The onstage persona was there. So even though he was deadly shy during the interview, he was like this, like, huggy, oh my god, I'm so glad you came, party twink, all and of a sudden.
He was over 7 foot tall, because he had, like, giant heels on, like, it was, he was taller than you.
Yeah, he's 6'6", yeah, yeah. And he was wearing platforms. Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. He was towering over me, and, yeah, he was just like, I need a hug, and he was all sweaty, and, yeah. But it was a very interesting interview. It was very last minute. I was on my way home. I slept poorly the night before. It was a very memorable interview for me. I thought you were going to say Tom Hooper's eyes was your favorite.
Tom Hooper is fantastic. The professor.
Tom Hooper is fine. It was his eyes that you went on about.
Yeah. No, he's dreamy. Yeah.
Do you have a most controversial story or topic that you ever covered?
Ooh. There's a few that we really wanted to cover, but we couldn't because
we had a story. We're on the way out. I'm gonna spill the beans. So an organization that has rebranded and since declared bankruptcy. I'll let you figure out which one.
We all know. Yes. Yeah.
When we were investigating them many, many years ago, I spoke to over 20 current and former employees One of the areas of their... I'm going to keep it vague so I don't get sued. One of the areas of their focus was anti-bullying. But apparently their board had sent their executive director for anger management courses because of the amount of hostility in the workplace.
Okay. Yeah, I thought I knew. Now I know. Yeah. Now I know. Yeah. Okay.
It was the amount of bullying that happens in the anti-bullying organization, mm-hmm. and so many staff spoke to us.
The mid-2010s, most LGBT organizations had an anti-bullying aspect to them, so...
Yeah, so it doesn't narrow it down.
That does not narrow it down, but still everyone in this room knows exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah, but the problem was that this individual that was accused of all this bullying was very litigious. Very, very litigious. Yeah. And would sue anyone at a drop of a hat.
Yes.
We ended up burying the story of a bully running the anti-bullying organization because of the potential legal action that
and could also because out. None of the witnesses were willing to put their name on anything.
Yeah, we couldn't get anyone on record. We had 20 people we spoke to.
Yeah.
And nobody was willing to go on record because of the how litigious this individual was.
Yeah. And using the corporate lawyer as well. So there was a deep pocket. I kept telling Luke, just put it in a manila envelope, drop it off at the police office.
Give it to the CBC, call it a day.
Yeah.
But if I was to point out regrets for the show, not breaking that story, I think, is one of the very few regrets I have.
It's a non-issue by now, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole organization was declared bankruptcy.
Yeah.
So, and they rebranded after this individual left. We interviewed a sex pest. Do you remember, speaking of being chased out of town?
Bradley's never heard the term sex pest before.
I really haven't. I have not heard those words.
You're clearly not an internet guy. I figured out a while ago that I was on 4chan and didn't even realize it for...
How is that possible?
It was the mid-2000s, and I was on the internet, and I was like, this is a weird place. I was on there for like 2 months and got bored, because the way that it's organized, it's impossible to find anything.
Did you think it was like GeoCities or something?
No.
You're like, this isn't Neopets?
No. I was even on Bee and Poll as well, and it was just... The amount of unfunny things you have to scroll through to get to the diamond in the rough, I was just, this is too much effort. I didn't stop because I was offended. I stopped because I was bored. So anyway.
So we interviewed an individual who was purposefully infecting young men with HIV.
Yes, I covered that trial. Yeah. I was in the courtroom. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before the arrest, we'd interviewed him on whatever it was. He was active in the community.
Oh yeah.
And we had no idea.
He was in the Pride Committee at the time, I think.
Who hasn't been in the Pride Committee? Somebody whose name I'm forgetting, who was in his 60s when I met him, said that he'd survived the AIDS epidemic, gay man in his late 60s, 70s.
I know exactly who you're talking
and
about.
And he said to me, you know, if you're, like, everybody's been on the Pride Committee, like every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the city has at some point served on Pride. It's like our jury duty from the gays.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, they'll chew you up and spit you out. I've been on the Pride Committee. You've been on the Pride Committee.
I have not. You've covered it.
Not yet.
No, I was on the committee for my softball league. That is enough.
Exactly. We've covered all kinds of folks. Mm-hmm. Sebastian, what song have you chosen for the show today?
Does it have to be Canadian?
I mean, whatever. Yeah.
Well, then I'm gonna break the ban, and I'm gonna say that there is a certain musical troupe that has been very influential in our history.
Is it?
It's the Scissor Sisters. Yeah.
Why didn't you give the context? Because we referenced this embargo.
It was basically, it was mostly during the Velvet Studio years where the Scissor Sisters, they were towards the end of their career, and they basically just took every scrapbook note that they had of an idea for a song, and they're just like, put it on an album. If it's terrible, we'll hold it back. But then they just came up with like three albums in like a 2-year period. It was something like that. They just kept pumping it in.
Dark Horse album was it like.
There's a lot. And it was just like again and again and again, and it was constantly flooding out. And we just kept showing, playing their music, and then every so often we'd be, you know, there'd be an up,